Hello and welcome to the special video edition of Invest Africa Insights. Today I'm delighted to be joined by James Kamal, who is the chair of DLA Piper Africa and oversees the firm's overall Africa strategy. He is a leading corporate projects and restructuring lawyer in Kenya with over 29 years experience focusing on finance, private equity, mergers and acquisitions, energy, infrastructure, and private and public partnerships. James, welcome, and it's a pleasure to have you on today.
Thank you, Elena. I'm very pleased to be here today.
Yes, yeah, so as you mentioned, you've been working closely with financial institutions for nearly 30 years, and today we're going to be talking about a more recent shift that's taken place towards an increased focus on environmental, social, and governance factors in financial products, investment decisions, and corporate strategies. And before the pandemic took hold, we were already seeing a lot of momentum building in that area, and ESG assets under management passed the $1 trillion mark just a couple of months ago. So my first question for you is, given your experience in the sector over the last few decades, is this really a tipping point? How new and significant is the shift that we've been seeing over the last few years?
Yes, as we do know that ESG has been a topical issue for a long time. But what has happened in the recent past is that there has been increased commitment by financial institutions, by asset managers, and by companies generally to embrace ESG as part of their businesses. And specifically, when you look at the financial sector and when you look at financial institutions, they're now considering ESG principles in the evaluation of the projects that they're going to invest in, the performance of the companies that they invest in, and also as they recruit people, they're looking at people who are able to guide properly on ESG considerations in companies and in the bank's overall policies and strategies.
Just to take perhaps a little step back for those who don't know so much about the issue, because we hear a lot about ESG and it comes with a lot of acronyms and a lot of terms around impact investing and sustainability and a sort of a whole myriad of interacting concepts. So perhaps you could just explain briefly what ESG means to you. What does it mean to incorporate ESG into a financial strategy?
Yeah, thank you very much, Elena. Like a lot of other acronyms, there are different definition explanations of what ESG is. And if I was to pick one definition that resonates very well with me is one that was given by the Financial Times, which described ESG as the subset of non-financial performance indicators, including sustainable, ethical, and corporate governance issues, such as managing a company's carbon footprint, ensuring there are systems in place to assure accountability.
And if anything, the sort of current disruption has really exposed the preparedness of different institutions and companies to these sort of governance and social factors. Do you think that the sort of black swan event we've seen in COVID-19 will push more financial institutions to think in ESG terms, to think about those longer term risks and to think about their impact a bit more?
Most certainly, Elena. And as you know, a lot of us have been doing a lot of thinking with more time not being in traffic, you know, staying at home. And amid this pandemic, there has obviously been a refocusing on the importance of ESG factors. They have come into focus more sharply, and we have seen a lot of suggestions that ESG should become a part of the response to COVID-19. And as you do know, and this is being discussed at homes and in our boardrooms, COVID-19 has raised questions about what kind of society we want to be post-crisis. And companies, in a lot of conversations I'm having with CEOs of companies, they're thinking about how they want to position themselves and how they want to provide social good. And when one looks at it, clearly the disruption in companies and financial market has brought with it a need for companies to focus more on resilience, which, as you do know, goes into the heart of corporate governance issues. and how boards run companies. So this has led companies to answer questions about how to manage governance and social human capital. It has also brought into focus how perceived failures of leadership are likely to take a long time to be remedied, and that they therefore need to employ more sustainable instruments which are brought about by ESG.
And you were speaking there a bit about sort of a movement and an uptake. Do you think that the structures are there to allow it to happen? I'm thinking about regulation around ESG, because currently we don't really have a centralized system, so it's down to organizations to sort of measure themselves and set their own metrics, more or less. I mean, I know you mentioned the UN earlier, but there's sort of no agreed upon set of regulations like we have for other aspects of financial services. So I was wondering if you think, do you think it would be a helpful step to see more regulation that is focused on ESG? Would that help with the sort of with the uptake and with the implementation?
Yeah. Elena, this is obviously normally a very interesting question. Do you bring in more regulations, or do you allow entities themselves to find value in self-regulating? Those are normally very important topics. The good thing is that in this particular case, we have the UN, which has taken a great deal of initiatives, by providing, for the 17 UN development goals, by providing the 10 principles under the UN Global Compact. It's already showing that these are going to be important consideration. But in addition to that, what we're increasingly seeing is that countries themselves are having different forms of, regulations. While they're not set out as ESG, but they touch on ESG matters. If you look at a lot of countries, they have laws relating to environment, generally, which deals with a lot of the issues that affect pollution, waste management, and all that. And then you have also a lot of corporate governance principles across the board in a lot of the laws that we see in Africa. And then increasingly, the labor laws are really focusing on the employees, and they're focusing on the important aspects of employees. So that becomes the second element, regulations not specific to ESG, but that touch on ESG. And then you now go into investor requirements, where you will find that for a lot of DFIs and for a lot of private equity investors, they would require people to comply with ESG. You then go to the most important element in our era, which is our people, and especially the young people. Increasingly, the young people are demanding to be associated with companies that have certain values. And these values range in all aspects of ESG. So the way I see it, the combination of the push by the UN, the investors, the governments, in whatever form of regulations that are going to come up, and by the people on requirement, and by the businesses' need to survive and conform, is going to really give us a very good framework for us to be able to push this forward. Whether at some point there will be more regulations or not, the way I see it is that this journey has started, and there is enough force to take it forward.
And just thinking a bit more specifically about the African context, are you seeing anything different in Africa to what you're seeing in these trends globally, or do they sort of mirror each other? What are you sort of seeing at the DLA Pipe Africa on the grounds that's sort of different there, if anything?
When one looks at, obviously, Africa, it tends to lag behind, when compared to the more developed markets. But the one thing that is clear is that there is a lot of investments which are coming into Africa. The investments that I talked about a few minutes ago by the DFIs, Development Financial Institutions, and the PE, are demanding that the companies be compliant on ESG. In Africa, where increasingly, poverty has become a central element, and where in a lot of countries we are coming from post-war situations, there's now a lot of focus on matters to do with human rights. In Kenya, as we are talking today, and this is obviously in the public domain, there is a big listed company which has been put under a lot of pressure on ESG issues. And just on Sunday, it had to restructure its board and issued very significant statements on what it's going to do to address ESG issues. And this arose from the pressure that came from UK, where the companies that buy their products, insisted that unless there is significant reforms, they're not going to continue buying the products. So I think this increased focus on ESG by companies that invest in Africa and by companies that buy products from Africa means that the African companies, the African governments, the African people have to react and make sure that they are the same level with the rest of the world.
So you're speaking of that, some of that pressure to take up ESG policies. What advice would you give to financial institutions sort of coming to this issue and feeling like they need to really develop a robust set of ESG policies? What would you advise them to sort of prioritize and look at first?
So I think the first focus of ESG would be environmental issues. And we have seen this happening where we are talking about, green bonds, where we are talking about green financing. So that increasingly the need for people to be compliant, to be green compliance, has gained a great deal of significance. We're also seeing increasing need to have companies aligned with other social elements and governance issues, which have always been there in terms of how are the boards structured and how do these companies treat their people. So if one then focuses on the three elements, the need to ensure that there is green financing, there's need to ensure that the people elements in terms of labor policies are taken care of, and then the governance structures, those will be important elements to ensure that there's sustainability of those business in the long term.
And I was curious to ask, yourself at DLA Piper, have you changed your ESG policies at all? What have you been doing regarding your own approach to ESG?
Yeah, that's a very important topic, which I've been discussing and which we have been dealing with, almost every week in the meetings that we are dealing with. Now, at DLA, we have added sustainability to these factors so that when we look at ESG, we look at it as sustainability and ESG. And sustainability for us refers to the ability of businesses and investors to create value over the long term. And this is with reference to the ESG dimensions in the operations, supply chains, investments, and ultimately performance. Now, this resonates very well with the vision that DLA Piper has on ESG, which is making businesses better by helping clients and communities transition to and thrive in a more sustainable future. And in every offering that we have, in the 10 sectors that we have, we ensure that we are able to add ESG into our offering, because otherwise our advice would be incomplete. And we have at DLA Piper an ESG steering committee, of which I'm privileged to be a member, and which is driving the SSG initiative, both internally and externally. And this SESG is coming right from the top. The board and our global CEO are leading the initiative on ESG. And the result of this is that we have emphasized in our offering and internally that ESG is not just about compliance. It's about performance, which is measured against internal and external stakeholders' expectation. And when we talk about internal, we are looking at measurable elements that are being done. That may include situations where we give credit for people who carry their own mugs. They get discounts in the various canteens that we have. We have our own water systems in London, Amsterdam, Brussels, Johannesburg, which then ensures that we are not using plastic. And we are doing this also for our own self-interest as a business, considering that our people want to be associated with SSG programs. And for us to be able to retain, attract and retain the best people, we must then have those practices. But it's also important, obviously, for us to be able to be compliant and also help our clients to be compliant to the extent to which our clients see this as an integral part of their businesses, either as a requirement of investors or a requirement of their own customers.
Now, you were recently named International Law Firm of the Year at the African Legal Awards this year, so congratulations for that. And I was interested to hear you say there that the ESG is not just about compliance. It's not just about sort of doing these things because it's it's according to a regulation. It's actually about performance, and it's about offering a higher quality of service and actually having a better sort of return. So I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that. Why do you think you were recognised in the award? And do you think that actually ESG factors will come to play a more important role in those sort of performance measurements and recognitions?
Thank you, Elena. We found that a remarkable achievement and one that we are really incredibly proud. And this award obviously was a testament to the bold thinking and trusting relationship that we have built with our clients every day, being a reflection of ongoing collaboration between our teams on the ground across Africa, but also across the globe, Europe, US, Middle East, and Asia Pacific. And we have had a very strong year. We had a very strong year in 2019 of advising clients on international business and government on some of the standout transactions. There was the big merger between two banks in Kenya, which is the largest bank merger in East Africa to date. That was the NIC with a merger with CBA. In Guinea, we were advising the government in defending a high-profile mining dispute. And then we have Garantco on a private infrastructure development group, a company on the first ever listing of a Kenyan green bond on the international securities market. So as you can see, ESG there played a significant role in advising Garantco in that investment in the London Stock Exchange. And then there was the Vodacom and Safaricom on the acquisition of the M-Pesa brand, which itself is significant in terms of fintech, in terms of how money is transmitted, across the board. And these are all very significant projects which touch on SSG, including one that was specifically, as a green bond. We also continue to look for ways to make positive impact on the African community in which we operate. We appreciate that it's not just enough for us to be able to advise clients on transactions and for us to be able to attract and retain the best people. We live in a society that needs us both in terms of our intellectual capability, but also very clear interventions. And we have a global scholarship program. We support outstanding law students in developing countries. We also have new parameter which a lot of people in this room may be familiar with, which is a big pro bono initiative. And we have taught nearly 2,000 law students and involved over 80 DLA paper lawyers from 12 countries in terms of the programs of teaching the law students. And it's also a testament that the world is noticing that we have people on the ground in 20 African jurisdictions. And just recently, I launched the Head Start Africa, a program that is intended not only to help the needy bright children, but also give them the skills to be able to survive in a very competitive world.
Now, just to sort of close us off, I thought it'd be good sort of at the end here to look a bit to the future and sort of your expectations for the next few years. Trying to sort of keep a positive note, and we've been talking about a lot of positive developments today, really. Are you feeling positive about the sort of future of Africa's financial institutions, increased development of financial institutions, and including the uptake of ESG? Or, do you think COVID-19 will pose a long-term challenge to those sort of changes we were seeing?
Lena, that's an interesting question. And I'll start by saying that obviously, the first impact of COVID-19 has been that the companies are struggling across the board. And as we do know, that at the heart of business is financing. And with companies being unable to meet their financing requirements, we have seen that the bank's profitability has gone down, and in some cases, up to 90%. We also do know that it has already increased deteriorating positions with regard to non-performing loans, which means that this reduces the ability of these financial institutions to lend to a great deal more companies. We do expect that this is going to persist for some time to come, and considering that some sectors will take very long to recover, we do expect that this NPL situation may in fact increase. But the good thing that I've seen is that the reaction that we are seeing from financial institutions is that they are now saying that environment, social, and governance is very important. Financial institutions are realizing that if you get it right with the companies that you are financing, you are likely to get better repayment positions. And we have now seen that big financial institutions such as HSBC have in fact announced that they have established a dedicated ESG unit. The fact that they are doing this means that they would also want to see their clients being organized in the same way, because they will be checking to see how compliant these companies are. We have also seen that financial institutions are increasingly dedicating specific finances to SEG and some significant amounts. We have looked at Goldman Sachs, which is talking about $700 billion US dollars, which is obviously significant amounts. So the way I see the future of businesses is now, and financial institutions, is going to be a great deal more targeted than general. And while it might take a bit of time, I think the future will then become sustainable because the right instrument, the right criteria is now going to be utilized when evaluating investments, when evaluating finance requirements, and when deploying those finance requirements.
So would you say, on balance, you're an optimist for the long term?
Yes, there's going to be a dip in the short term, but what is going to happen is that the financial institutions are going to develop robust policies that will deal with crisis and risk management, that will deal with all the various issues, HR issues, that will deal with environmental aspects that will affect the entire supply chain of the clients that are seeking financing, and that is going to have dedicated people who can not only advise the banks on the evaluations, but also advise companies on how they have to structure themselves if they have to succeed in their businesses. And in that, we do expect that DLA Piper will play a significant role in helping in developing those policies and procedures that together will assure a more sustainable future.
James, thanks so much. I'm sure that will have been very helpful to those listening, you know, both who already have ESG strategies in place and then who maybe are sort of coming to the topic anew. So thanks so much for sharing your insights and your experience.
Thank you very much, Elena.
Thank you.
Really appreciate you inviting me to the topic.
If people would like to find out more and follow up with you, we will be sharing some links in the notes to DLA Piper and how you can get in touch with the team there. So James, thank you once again.
Thank you, Elena.
Thank you.